my father had related to me where he had been talking to these guys that came in to fuel up on their way out of Unalakleet on some parts delivery mission. I guess they hit it off, and he said, look, you're not scheduled, but I got a slot if you want to take a ride out with us and come on back. He assumed when he told my mom he was going to go on this flight with them that it was out to a dew line installation. But when he got in the chopper, the guy said, no, this isn't dew line. He said, this is some weird installation. And then he said, well, what do you mean weird? He said, well, it's underground. And the co-pilot, he said, look, this is some generating facility or something that's underground. And he said, well, what's it, just a nuclear power plant? And he said, no, it's not nuclear. It's nothing we built. It's thousands of years old. It's cut stone like a pyramid. It's 150 feet below ground, and they can't figure out what the hell it is.
Hmm.
So he said, look, this is all off the record. I'm not even supposed to know this, but this is what I was told, that this thing will put out enough power to power the whole North Slope, the whole state of Alaska, and he said, this thing could power the entire country of Canada. That's how much juice it puts out, and they don't have a clue where it came from, and it's underground. So they had three aluminum stainless steel looking cases. That's it. They were beautiful cases. They were all machined.
What happened?
They flew out in a helicopter, and I believe it was a Huey, but they were escorted by a fixed-wing aircraft that never landed. And my dad said you could see them every once in a while, or 1,000, 2,000 feet above them, just making S-curves, you know, so they wouldn't run away from the chopper. He said, and I really don't have any idea why that fixed-wing aircraft is following us all the way out there. I guess in case we crash, they'll know where to send people to pick up the pieces. They flew out about 2 hours east, my dad said, of Unalakleet.
Did your father ever detail exactly where he thought this place was?
He said it was in the middle of nowhere, but he said they didn't change course throughout the whole flight. And it was, he said, pretty much due east of Unalakleet. When he landed, he was heavy. He said he was so heavy that when he sat down, the skids spread out. He flew enough in choppers. He said he knew the thing was working pretty hard the whole way out, and they were on fumes when they got out there. And I said, well, what did this place look like? He goes, it was the tundra. There was a blockhouse and a fuel dump and like a motor pool shed, a garage for vehicles. And he said they had a snowcat, and he could see a couple other vehicles. And then off to the side, there was a couple of mine shaft elevators. And believe me, my father came from a coal mining family, so he certainly knew what a mining elevator looked like with the circular pulleys up top and the gantry and all that stuff. So he said there was a couple of these gantries sticking out of the tundra, and they all had elevated guardhouses on them, and they had electrical razor wire fence around them. And they said, electrified fencing, do not approach or something. He said, man, there was a lot of firepower around there, and they didn't have 50 calibers on their Jeeps to shoot polar bears.
Right.
You know, they had them trained on us when we landed. The fixed-wing aircraft kept circling overhead, and these guys all had black uniforms with no insignias on. So he said, I know they were military uniforms, but even the pilot said, I don't even know who these guys are with. Probably spooks is what he said, figuring they were CIA or whatever. But here's the creepy part. I said, so did you see cables coming out of the ground or anything? You know, a transformer station or any of that? He goes, no, but he said, we got about 5 miles from the place, and the co-pilot said to me, now listen, things are going to get a little bizarre. We were told that all our instruments are going to go crappy and we have to go VFR. And VFR is visual flight rules instead of instrument. So he said, don't panic. You're going to hear alarms going off maybe and all kinds of stuff, but we're just going to fly VFR. So sure enough, he said, all of a sudden, the major, who was the pilot, said, here we go, boys. My father, he was sitting in the back, and he looked over between the two seats, he said, and the entire radar screen went completely green. So all the trace went off the radar. All of a sudden, a couple of red lights, alarms went for, I guess, generator power. Alarm went off. Horns are going. And the co-pilot said, no worry, everything's under control. They took it off autopilot, and they were flying it manually and had visual contact for the ground. They're only 500 or 1,000 feet up, he said. But all the electronics went haywire. He said he could see the artificial horizon just flip-flopping. And he said the compass was spinning like 50 miles an hour, so there was no compass heading. Everything was bizarre, The lights were out, like they had lost their generators, and they were still flying. He must have had some power to it, whether it was running off batteries or whatever. And they landed. Nobody got out of the aircraft. Six guys came in to pull these three cases off. Nobody said anything. Nobody signed anything. They fueled them up with a tank behind a Jeep, he said, but fueled up when the engine's running and reengaged the rotors and off they went. And I said, well, Dad, you know, what do you think could happen? He goes, the Japanese didn't kill me in World War II, and the coal mines didn't kill me, so what are they going to do?
So your father is flying in a U.S. Air Force helicopter for 2 hours, going pretty much straight east of Unalakleet, Alaska, in the spring of 1978. And he gets a warning that before they land, there is going to be all kinds of radar and other issues with the helicopter.
Oh, absolutely. He said, look, we've been told that whatever the heck they're dealing with here is going to screw up all the electronics on this aircraft. We're ready for that. We can fly through that. We're not going to remain on radar. You know, we've got VFR conditions, so don't panic when you hear everything hitting the fan. It's not like we lost an engine or the rotors are coming off or anything. We're expecting that. They briefed us to be prepared. That will happen. So whatever they were told, they were not at all concerned that they could fly through it.
Doesn't it sound like the crew on this helicopter had done this before?
That's an interesting thought. Either that or they believed whoever briefed them not to worry about it.
When they landed, they had these three machined heavy cases in the helicopter.
Yes.
Six men in black uniforms that are unidentified come and they take out these three cases.
Yes.
And then the pilot remains on the ground with the engine running while somebody goes to a Jeep, gets fuel from the back, and puts it into the helicopter while it's still running.
Well, it was a trailer. He said it was a trailer behind a Jeep. It wasn't a full tanker, which had a pump on it. And, yeah, they pumped it into the fuel tank while the thing was running. That's not standard procedure, I can tell you that.
And on the ground, they had military guns aimed.
Oh, they all had guns. He said they were armed to the teeth, yes.
They were in front of people who had armaments aimed at them the whole time the refueling was going on, correct?
Yeah, he said there's a guy standing in the back of a Jeep with a 50 caliber mount pointed at the helicopter.
That 50 caliber machine gun could have taken that helicopter down?
Oh, in 2 seconds.
Okay. And above the whole scene was something like a C-130 that was rotating above.
That is correct. The whole time. I said to my dad, so they're standing there with a 50 cal pointed at you? He says, yeah. I even said to the major, whose side are we on here? Who the hell are these guys? He didn't say a word. And then the guys came down low. He said, I knew I should just keep my mouth shut. I wasn't even supposed to be there, so.
The identifiable mine shaft elevators at this remote place had razor wire around them in addition to all the people with guns.
Yeah, electrified razor wire. He says, well, I don't think it was to keep polar bears from falling down the hole. I can tell you that. Electrified fence, do not approach.
Did your father ever give you any more details about where he thought this location was in relationship to, say, Mount McKinley or any of the mountains?
Well, you know, it's interesting because he said it couldn't have been that far from Denali. He did say, we went for a long ways. He said, we couldn't have been that far away from McKinley.
Could you repeat what the pilot of that helicopter said to your father about what he and his co-pilot knew underneath that ground?
He told my dad, quote, this is as super secret a situation as the Manhattan Project was. He said, nobody is supposed to know this place even exists. And, quote, this thing is some kind of power generator, and it's thousands of years old. It's made out of stone like a pyramid. They don't know where it came from, who made it, or how it works. But it could generate enough power to power the whole North Slope, all of Alaska, and probably the whole country of Canada. And he said, we're not even supposed to know what we're delivering. And here's part two of this, Linda, as I related in the email. 6 years later, over lunch with the chief engineer of the television studio at Bell Labs in Murray Hill, talking about vacation, and the guy says, oh, yeah, a bunch of guys from the labs in Western got recruited by somebody in the government to go up to the North Slope to look at some power generating station they couldn't figure out.
And if there is a stone pyramid that is maybe twice the size of Cheops underground in Alaska, at least 150 feet down to the vertex and down to 700 feet to the base, and that it has been built thousands of years ago, according to what the pilots had heard, and that it can generate enough energy to power the nation of Canada. What is the relationship between that stone pyramid underground in Alaska and Cheops and all of the pyramids that have been built around this planet, many of which are allegedly underground for reasons unknown, or at least under dirt for reasons unknown? Who built all of these pyramids? And if they were machines for energy, why is it that our government wouldn't allow all of this pyramid energy to be used on this planet?
I think that that's the $64,000 question. It's a little hard to believe we have these blips in the development of knowledge of mankind. You go from the Israelites wandering around in the desert in subsistence living to society that can build structures that we can't even emulate today with all our technology. And then we drop back into the Dark Ages. You know, I don't think that society is nonlinear like that. To me, that on its surface says there's something not right. How can you have the mass structures in the Yucatan and the Mayans, the Aztecs, and then it goes back to barely scratching out a living and having not enough knowledge to feed yourself? That doesn't make sense.
And what you mean is that the very nature of high intelligence and high technology, as it is even seen in Göbekli Tepe in Turkey 12,000 years ago, and the pyramids and the stone circles around the planet, imply that some other intelligence that is not Homo sapien has been working on this planet, terraforming and building these structures for their means, their agendas, completely separate from the evolving track of Homo sapien.
Yes. Why, Linda, is it so impossible and so improbable and so inconceivable that we were colonized here for the exact same reasons that we are currently discussing colonizing another planet, Mars?
For some reason, for a very long time, the power greed structure of this planet, which in and of itself might not be entirely human, seems to have had a self-interest in keeping the general evolving human population from knowing the truth. That is where we are in 2012. Policies of denial are still in place from World War II. And until those policies of denial are officially lifted, scenes, as your father described, occurring 2 hours east of Unalakleet, Alaska, in the mid-1970s, will keep occurring on this planet while people are still told that we are alone in the universe. That is the first huge lie.
You couldn't be more correct. And that's why I came forward. And you know, I have run into so many pilots that have said to me in the last 25 years that I've been in cockpits and behind the scene where they said, look, you know what? I got 13,000 hours. I flew B-24s in World War II. I'm ready to retire. And I really don't give a flip if you'll believe me or not. I know what I saw. I saw this. And quite frankly, somebody needs to hear this before I take a dirt nap. So sooner or later, the tide will turn because the volume of documented evidence that folks like you have gone out on a limb and fought to bring to the public's attention will turn the tide.